Soccer Show on World Football Day.
And welcome to the latest episode of the Mexican Soccer Show. My name is Eric Gomez. I'm joined, as always, by three guys that really know their Mexican soccer. But can sometimes be a little bit. I'm just kidding, man. I was gonna say something stupid. I'm joined by Naeem Moran, somewhere in the United States. Where are you right now?
I'm in Houston, Texas, Eric. Right here, in the good old state. But I'm about to move to Europe in a couple of weeks. So looking forward to that, and we'll see.
You're always moving, man. Always moving.
Making the move.
You can never, I mean, it's you know, where in the world is Naeem Moran? I know Johnny Rico is somewhere along the U.S.-Mexico border in Southern California. Is that right?
Yep. San Diego, California. Quick shout out to my dad. It's his birthday today, but I know he doesn't really listen to the show, but still. Still no shout out to him.
Okay. Not even your dad listens.
My family members listen to this crap either. I'm just kidding. Hey, your dad shares a birthday with Mario Balotelli. That's an interesting fact. You can tell him that. And finally, last but not least, in the middle of a torrential rainstorm, is Tom Marshall over in Guadalajara.
Yo, how's it going? Yeah, raining pretty hard here. Usual afternoon storms coming down, which means you can't really do anything at all apart from that. Sit at home.
It was when it rains, it pours in Guadalajara, huh?
Yeah,
it really does. But at least it'll be a bit cooler. I mean, the good thing is it builds up the heat all day, and it's just almost like you can't take it. And then at least when you get a bit of rain, it cools down and you can sleep better and stuff. Anyway.
someone from England like yourself should be used to the rain, huh?
Yeah.
I think that's why he's there in the first place.
Yeah, you just get away. But at least you only get it for like a month here. Over there, it's like, you know, 11 months. So.
That's true. Well, if you guys are up for it, we should probably get on with the show. Otherwise, this will just be the Weather Channel's podcast for about an hour or so. There's plenty of good stuff to talk about. I mean, of course, the Mexican national team is going to face the Ivory Coast this week, or next week, rather, in a friendly against, or rather, being played in New Jersey. Only four European-based players called up for Mexico, which I thought was pretty interesting. So let's make that our first talking point. Were any of you guys surprised that guys like Hector Herrera or pretty much anybody that isn't Diego Reyes and Chicharito, who later had to bow out, was not called up for Mexico?
I think the schedule problem is one of them. I think this week in La Liga starts, the Premier League starts, and also the Liga Sagres in Portugal now with Diego Reyes and Hector Herrera on the team. That will take more consideration. The scheduling was a problem, and also the injuries that Andres Guardado suffered in a couple of weeks ago against AC Milan, and Chicharito, who was out in the Community Shield and will be out for the first game that Manchester United has against Swansea. Yeah, guys. What are the thoughts about the call-ups of Aquino, Herrera? What other one comes to mind? I mean, we don't see the Jonathan Dos Santos or the Carlos Velas at all.
Johnny, what are your thoughts on that?
I guess like Naeem said. They're getting their season underway. It's to the point where it helps the player out more not to get called up to the national team, especially, you know, if they're going to be racking up the losses and building up the pressure on themselves against the media. It's, you know, it's time better spent at their club.
You know, do you think, guys, that this friendly should have been more in Europe instead of in New York? And the players wouldn't have made that 6-8 hour trip on plane. Yeah. Do you think it would have been helpful to make this friendly in Europe?
Most of the friendly should be played not in the U.S. anymore. You know, I don't think that this isn't. Mexico's not a team that needs just, you know, the huge cash influx that maybe other other national teams need to be able to conduct their business. You know, Mexico, as we all know, is a very, very rich national team. And this is just pure greed, you know? This is pure greed. And you got to blame the Mexican Federation for setting these types of games up. Yeah, again, playing against the Ivory Coast is a good friendly. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it's not the Ivory Coast games I have problems with. It's the Guatemala games. It's the, you know, it's the Trinidad and Tobago friendlies. It's whenever Mexico plays a really
team.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever Mexico plays a really third-rate opponent, that's when you feel that these FIFA dates are really being misused. But, you know, yeah, they should really try that out. And I think that there was an effort to do so when Chepo started out as the Mexican national team manager. I think we saw Mexico play Chile and Barcelona a couple years ago.
And then they also played Poland and Warsaw, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're going away from that. And I think it's the wrong moment to really kind of go back to their old ways, especially with the crisis that the Mexican national team is going through at the moment. But
it's actually thanks to that crisis that they don't want to risk big losses in Europe. I think they're looking for the easy win in the United States to kind of relieve some of that pressure.
Well, these contracts are filled out months before, though, Johnny. I mean, I don't think that this Ivory Coast game really came to be about a couple of months ago. They had this date they had this date reserved for quite a bit of time, and they're going about their contractual obligations. Yeah. But
I think it's 5 a year, isn't it? You've got to play 5 friendlies in the US every year, and that's to deal with the marketing group and obviously they're making big money. I mean, it's not just in terms of the amount of people that go in the stadium. It's like anything, if you're charging in dollars, you know, you can charge a lot more for people in the U.S. than you could, you know, if you're in Guadalajara or Morelia or something, you know. Like, if you can't charge people, you know, $40 for a ticket, I mean, just won't happen in Mexico just because of the situation. I don't know. I just think it's this friendly game. It just all seems to, you know, it should be a really important game on the face of it in terms of, you know, it should be getting the team in order for this big game against Honduras, and then the trip to the US in early September. And I think the lack of the European players, you know, Chicharito, Aquino, I think Chepo obviously doesn't see him being in that the squad, or definitely not playing a major part. So I think that's why he's out. But you know, it's a shame that Chicharito and Guardado aren't there, you know, because you've got players now with, like, Reyna, who's just absolutely, you know, flying in the Mexican League. It would have been good to see how he could have fit in with those kind of players, whereas now, because those players aren't there, it's going to go in a little bit unknown, that. I think it's a bit of a different Herrera as well. I mean, it obviously looks like, you know, Chepo, you can understand it from the point of view, just keep him there in Europe, let him get developing with his new club, Porto. But you know, I think it says that Chepo maybe doesn't necessarily see a player like Herrera starting that home game against Honduras or up in the US. I mean, that's how I'm reading it. And, you know, I think he still prefers Torrado or Salcido in the center midfield.
And Herrera had a good run out in the Confederations Cup. He didn't get a lot of minutes, as most of these young guys did for Chepo. But I thought he was pretty good. I mean, there was, I think, one game in the Hex where he got the start and didn't do too well, but redeemed himself, in my opinion, in the Confederations Cup. I mean, you bring up an interesting point there. There are going to be several position battles going on for this match. I mean, I'm looking at 4 guys who could potentially start on the wings defensively for Mexico, and I mean, I'm just going to go around the virtual room here and ask you guys who you think is going to start. Severo Mesa, Miguel Layún, Jorge Torres Nilo, and Carlos Salcido, 4 guys who could easily start on the wing defensively for Mexico on either side. Who starts for you guys and why?
I guess I'll go first. I say probably Layún and Torres Nilo.
Torres on the left then and Layún on the right?
Yeah, and Salcido in the midfield. That's just my gut feeling. I feel that Layún had a really good Gold Cup, and Chepo might want to check him out a little further.
Yeah, just to follow Johnny, I think I agree with Layún and Torres Nilo getting the start. I mean, against Japan in that, you know, insignificant match in the Confederations Cup, Torres Nilo played on left back, and Carlos Salcido was left on the bench, and he came in the 70th minute, if I'm not mistaken. And I do see maybe Salcido playing that center midfielder role against Ivory Coast because he has more, he can conduct the ball better than I think Zavala in that role. And he did it in the Olympics, so I think Chepo might give him a try there. Layún, I think this is a major test for him. I think the offense that Ivory Coast is can't be compared to the offense that he played against, like a Panama, Martinique, or Canada. This is a major test for Layún, and we will see what he's capable of. Tom?
Yeah, no, I think he'll go with Layún. I don't think I would. I think I'd go with Meza. I'm not completely convinced about him either. But, you know, I think he's solid, whereas Layún, I think, just an accident waiting to happen at points, you know. Although going forward, you know, you got to give him credit. He's very good going forward. Torres Nilo was really good on Saturday in the Clásico Regio. So, I mean, I think he deserves a start. Yeah, and Salcido, I'm not convinced. He's not playing left back, so I think it's always a problem. And I think with his pace now, I think against the better teams, he's going to get, you know, they're going to rip past him. I don't know. That's how I see it. But I mean, especially that right back is just been a constant headache. I think it's, you know, I think what is it, 7-8 players, something like that Chepo's tried there. The standout one's Guti Estrada, who hasn't. I don't think even. I think he's been called in once for Chepo, but I mean. I mean, he really is running out of options at that right-back position.
Yeah, and I think that as well, and you touched on a good point there, Salcido's speed is not what it used to be, and Ivory Coast have several guys who can really, really run. So I would also go for Torres Nilo, and Chepo, being the predictable fellow that he is, will probably give Layún a start, given that he was one of the best players for Mexico in the Gold Cup, and that's really not saying much. Mexico is pretty terrible in the Gold Cup, as we all know. Let's move up the pitch a little bit, shall we? I mean, we all kind of mentioned, and we're all kind of in favor of Salcido starting in one of those two defensive mid spots in the middle. Who's gonna start for Chepo in that other spot? Is it gonna be Torrado, or are we gonna get to see Jesús Zavala start once more?
Ooh, in this one, I don't know if you guys agree with me. I mean, I see Salcido starting, and I see Salcido playing alongside Chaco Jimenez in that central midfielder role. Of course, Chaco will possess more offensive qualities than defensive qualities. We have seen that through the years. I think, you know, in Honduras, the Honduras match at Azteca, I think Chepo has to be offensive. I mean, he's playing home. There are certain obligations he now has.
Would you play Chaco that far back, though? I mean, for Cruz Azul, he does play in the middle, but he doesn't play that far back as Chepo has his two holding mids play. I mean, he's usually a little bit more up front. And Chaco, you know, this is going to be his first game. He's 31 years old. Would you really have him run that much for a friend?
I think, Eric, I see he could actually put Chaco and Fernando Arce playing with Salcido on mid and, you know, sort of make it look like a 4-3-3 formation in that case. In that way, you know, Chaco wouldn't run that much. Maybe Arce would do the running and then put him with Salcido, and Jimenez will be more close to the attackers.
I would actually love it if Arce would start. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I think that Arce is one of those players that would definitely be on my short list. But it does provoke sort of a problem for him because, you know, Chepo loves him some Torrado. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Torrado would start this game alongside Salcido and we would see the same 4-2-2-2 you know, formation that we always see from him. The owners have demanded a change. Johnny, where do you think the change is going to be? I mean, are we going to see Chaco in the middle or are we going to see him on the wings?
I'm going with predictable Chepo and seeing Chaco on the wings, one of the wings, and Angel Reina on the other wing, and having Oribe Peralta and Raul Jimenez as forwards.
So you'd put Giovanni on the bench?
I would. Probably put him in to play in the second half.
That's not going to make him happy. I mean, we've seen every time that Giovanni had to come off the pitch. I mean, do you guys remember that Honduras game, though? When Giovanni came off the pitch, I mean, he was looking pretty angry. And I think that he has been having a bit of trouble with Chepo. He's been one of the guys who's been least vocal about keeping him. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's going to run that risk. I think Giovanni's going to start.
Yeah. That's true. There's another game as well in the Azteca when I can't remember which game it was. It was one of the nil-nilers. It might have been Jamaica.
No. Yeah, he did take him off against Jamaica. You're right.
But I remember in the first half, Chepo was just screaming at Giovanni was playing on the right wing, and he was just screaming at him, going, "Get back out," because Giovanni kind of drifted in a bit, trying to get into the game, you know, try and have some influence. So, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, it'd be fascinating to see, after all this is over, what relationship he actually has with certain players, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, they're just on the field, they don't look like they're happy, you know what I mean? They don't look like they're definitely not enjoying it. You know, they're not enjoying putting the green shirt on, and you know, it just looks like it's really hard work at the minute. I don't know what they're going to do. He's going to do in midfield. I mean, I'd like to see Arcee, and I think the thing with Arcee that I really like, and I think what has been missing for a lot of Mexican players is consistency. I mean, Arcee now, since he's been with Tijuana, has just been week in, week out, and sometimes more than like every 3 days. Is that, you know what I mean? Despite his age, you know. And you know exactly what you're going to get from him. He's works hard. And, you know, I think for that reason, he deserves a place in the midfield. I mean, Torrado's, you know, he's just getting on now. He's been an absolute great player for Mexico. You know, I wouldn't be completely against him in that holding midfield role, but as long as they're like, there's two other attacking midfielders who are more attacking in their outlook, you know, so... but I don't know. I mean, it's not... When you look at it on paper, to be honest... doesn't look good, does it? I mean, in terms of the central midfield positions, you compare them to, like, the top nations in the world, you know. I mean, this is the thing that goes back to the Olympics, doesn't it? I mean, we thought that Hector Herrera would, you know, really step up. I mean, let's not write him off. I'm not writing him up, don't get me wrong, but, you know, he needs to get used to playing in Europe. And then the other one was Chaton. I mean, I think everyone thought Chaton was just going to step up and, you know, make that kind of defensive midfield position his own. So in some ways you can't really blame Chepo for going back to these, you know, Torrado or someone like that. But I mean, I don't know. It doesn't look good. You know what I mean? I really don't think it looks great at the minute in the central midfield positions.
Chepo has only two strikers called up for this game: Oribe Peralta and Damian Alvarez, or rather Raúl Jiménez. Don't really see him going out there at the start of the match with two guys because he has nobody else on the bench to take their place. Who starts up front for Mexico? Peralta or Jimenez? I'll start with you again, Tom.
Yeah, I think Oribe Peralta's, you know, he's had a good start to the season with Santos. You know, injured, so that's why he wasn't involved this summer. And I think Giovanni Dos Santos will play off him.
I agree with Tom. I think I'll go also with Peralta. I think he's a player that, you know, he was, you know, a lot of injuries. You know, cost him a spot in the Confederations and also in the Gold Cup. He's a player that we want to see back with El Tri, see him in action, scoring goals, I think. But we have to come to the conclusion. I don't know what's going to happen once Chicharito comes back. I mean, is Peralta going to play alongside Chicharito or is Chepo going to end up picking one of them?
They haven't been really good. And I think Jimenez has also felt a lot of the pressure come down. The Gold Cup was not good, despite the fact that he scored a couple goals. He was not the player that we're used to seeing. And you know what? He donned that America jersey at the start of the season, and he's got two goals again. You know, one coming from the penalty spot, a really great penalty kick that he took against Atlanta last weekend. But he's been playing a lot better. So, I mean, maybe it is Chepo. Maybe it is the national team, because a lot of these guys are doing pretty well for their club teams. And when it comes time to... attempt to replicate that success with the national team, it's just not happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to another thing that I think has been a constant theme over the last, well, definitely 6 months, is that it doesn't seem like there's a set idea about, you know, how the team's going to play. And if there is, it seems like the players don't understand it. And I think the best example of that is the striking positions. I mean, I don't, you know, because remember... If we go back, like, you know, 9 months to a year ago, he always used to play with Chicharito and then, you know, a more attacking midfielder, number 10 off him, you know what I mean? And he was very much like Chicharito was a lone striker. And then for some reason, Chepo decided to change that, perhaps because he was like, you know, Oribe Peralta's too good to be on the bench. So then started playing with two men up front, you know, and then through various... It's just never worked, you know what I mean? And I just think, it shows that maybe Chepo doesn't actually know what he wants about this team. And I think La Volpe, when he's been speaking about the national team, he's highly critical of stuff like that. It's like the players don't look like they know, you know, what the job is and what they're supposed to be doing. I don't know. I kind of agree with that. I don't know how to describe the type of football they're playing. I don't know, you know. I don't know. It's just not glued together, is it?
Unfortunately, I think La Volpe knows what he's talking about in that regard. La Volpe is one of those guys that, you know, he's kind of hit or miss, but when you give him a good group of players, he usually gets good results out of them fairly quickly. So, you know, that's absolutely correct in my opinion. Let's move on a little bit and just give our prediction for the final result of this game. And, you know, Chepo's not going to be fired despite, you know, the fact that they might lose this game. But if they do lose, what is this going to do for the confidence going into September 6th against Honduras?
I think the confidence is going to go. This team has a lot of behind it, a sense that, you know, maybe these are the players, most of the players that will be in that Honduras and U.S. game. I mean, there's a reason why Chepo called them. And I think it will be convenient for this team to get a positive result. I mean, a 1-0, a 2-1, any type of win, I think, will suffice. Just to gain some momentum coming into these matches, because, you know, if they get another 0-0 tie at Azteca, you know, it will be, Mexico will be easy prey in Columbus, Ohio against the U.S. because the confidence will be really low.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they can afford a loss at this point. It's weird when things are so bad that even friendlies become must-win situations, but that's how desperate Mexico are at the moment.
Yeah, I think Mexico are going to lose. I think Ivory Coast are a decent team. They've got Drogba back, you know what I mean? I can see Drogba scoring a couple of goals. I don't know about you, Scott, but, you know, I just can see him scoring a couple of goals, and I can see Mexico having another one of those performances where, you know, nothing seems to click. You know, the huffing and puffing, but, you know, nothing's actually really, really happening. I mean, I don't know. See what he does with the team as well, because the balance is a bit, you know, like Eric mentioned before, so many wingers and stuff, or, you know, players who can play on the wing. I mean, Luis Montes is out now, so that's one less, but, you know, Damian Alvarez, not mentioned him, but, I mean, what's his role going to be? I don't know. Jacko, I mean, you know, where's he going to play? I don't know. I'd personally like to see a midfield three of Torrado just being like just in front of the defence, and then Arce and Jacko. I mean, it's not exactly the most youthful, is it? but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. Reina as well. I mean, I think he has to play Reina. I just think he's the on-form Mexican player anywhere in the world. So I think he has to play
him as a second striker, to be honest.
Yeah, he'd put him. Yeah. You know what? I watched him when he came to the Stadio Omnilife against Chivas, and I was just really impressed with him, how they gave him just a free role, and, you know, he just wandered into positions, and he was just a constant headache for the Chivas defence. He was pulling the defence out, you know, centre backs were out of position, and, you know, he's. At the end of the day, he's definitely got the quality and the talent to be a starter in this national team. Just needs to prove it. So yeah, I hope he plays though.
I don't know, man. I think the worst result that could possibly come from this game is a draw. And I'll tell you why. You know, Mexico has just been drawing all over the place in these important hex games. A draw is not going to is not going to give you much, because even if they play well, or even if they play badly, the result is really what matters right now. And if they lose, I think that they can really kind of point to the fact that they haven't been good of late, and that Ivory Coast has got some pretty interesting players, as you guys have mentioned. You know, if they win, then obviously that's going to be a huge boon for them, no matter how they play. I mean, they could win 1-0 off of an own goal, and that's still going to be a lot better for Chepo and his situation than any other result. But if they draw, you know, I think it's going to be kind of this deja vu status quo type situation that really doesn't tell us anything. And and they're going to want to avoid that at all costs. That's exactly what I think is going to happen. You know, they're definitely going to try to just neutralize Ivory Coast and avoid damage as they have with every other team in the world. They're probably going to concede a goal, and they're going to find a goal with a guy like Angel Reyna or Oribe Peralta, and that game's just going to – it has 1-1 written all over it in my mind. Yeah. So, you know, here's hoping that doesn't happen for them.
Yeah. I think one other thing just to point out, I think it looks pretty certain that Massa's in as well. I didn't see Massa's in there, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens at centre-back as well, you know, because got this thing, you know, Diego Reyes just pushing Massa so much, and you know, with Drogba playing, it's going to be you know, a real test of the Mexican defence as well.
Probably think it's going to be Moreno and Reyes at this point.
Do you reckon?
Yeah. Despite what could happen with Massa, who, you know, has been.
Those two are the center backs, then there's no doubt that Torrado will play just so somebody can wear the Campos armband.
That's true. That's actually a good point. You know, and I think Chepo does think about those sort of things because, you know, Corona's going to start in goal, and I don't think it's smart to give Corona the captain's armband with everything that's been going on.
True. The situation with the Clambuterol.
Yep, which we really haven't touched, but, you know, it's I'm getting a huge deja vu from 2 years ago, even though we didn't have the show back then. So I think we'll just kind of gloss over that and move on. Let's talk a little bit about something more near and dear to Liga MX fans' hearts, domestic issue with Chivas. Chivas basically giving Benjamin Galindo, their manager, one more week at the helm and saying, if you don't beat Puebla, you're out of here. Pretty ugly loss for them against Cruz Azul. They were handed a hard time. Tough decision by the ref there that kind of screwed them over with a goal that was called offside and was probably not. Really felt like the ref was against Chivas throughout the run of play, but they didn't play well, and Cruz Azul did take advantage of several opportunities in front of goal. You know, I never thought I'd say this, especially with Galindo coaching, but Chivas looks really ragged defensively, and I'll ask our Chivas insider, Tom Marshall, to explain why that is, even though the cast of characters really hasn't changed except for Néstor Vidrio.
Yeah, I mean, everyone seems to blame Héctor Reynoso usually for the defensive errors, and you know, he really isn't popular at the minute with the fans. But I mean, you know, he's put Vidrio in there and Alvarez in the centre of defence. They've got, you know, a Sparsa at left back who's not a left back, so you know that doesn't help with the balance. I mean, Alvarez is only 21. You know, is he ready to be playing week in, week out? I think he's going to be a really good player, Christian Alvarez, for Chivas. You know, it's just it's so difficult for him because Reynoso looks like he's a bit past it now. He just looks ridiculously slow, whereas Alvarez looks like he's still a year away from being you know, a regular. I mean, the thing that struck me about the Cruz Azul game for Chivas was that if you just compare player for player, I mean, I know in football, you know, you can overcomplicate things, you know what I mean? If you just get up on the internet, the Cruz Azul starting 11 for that game against Guadalajara, and then the Chivas starting 11, and then you go through player by player, position for position, which players of Chivas would make the Cruz Azul team? And you honestly, and just be as honest as you can, no matter who you support, you know? And you're honestly not getting many. I mean, you know, Marcus Lugo possibly, Marco Fabian, I think, Defo. Aside from them, I don't think you'd have any Chivas player in that Cruz Azul squad. And I think the bottom line with Chivas is, it doesn't matter whether it's Galindo as manager or anyone else, you know, the team isn't the same quality as a team like Cruz Azul or America or Monterrey, Tigres, Santos. It's just a level down. I mean, so I think you know, that's the problem with Chivas. I mean, everyone expected him to win. They want him to win. But at the minute, the bottom line is the team isn't good enough. I mean, that's for me. It's going to be improved when Aldo de Nigris finally makes his debut. But, I mean, look at João Rojas, 2 goals the other day. I mean, just quality player that obviously Chivas can't have because of the all-Mexican policy. Or even Chaco Jimenez, who can play for the national team, but not for Chivas. I mean...
The thing about Chivas, I think right now Tom mentioned, well, Aldo de Nigris is going to come and play. He played with the U-20 this past weekend, Aldo de Nigris. But who's going to give him the passes? I mean, I don't see that much creation going on with Chivas since Ramoncito Morales days.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chapo Sanchez, he's good on the ball. He's good at twisting and turning. But in terms of assists and scoring goals from the wing, he's not good enough. Not if you compare him to Rojas or Barrera, you know what I mean? Fabian's just not doing it for Chivas. I just think he's under, a lot of the players are just under ridiculous pressure as well. I mean, it's kind of unfair in a certain way, but everybody wants Fabian to do everything at Chivas, you know what I mean? Whereas that wouldn't be expected at another club.
Yeah, and he did get called up. So, I mean, somebody up there in the Mexican national team likes him, despite the fact that, again, he was pretty off and on during the Gold Cup as well. But definitely a player with oodles of talent there. Another team that's not having a good run at the moment is Pumas. Pumas just fired their sporting director, Alberto Garcia Aspe, former national team player for Mexico, just a really great midfielder for several years for teams like Pumas and America. Beto Aspe being fired and Mario Trejo, the former sporting director, being brought in. I was reading something interesting about Pumas. They spent over $20 million in just over 18 months to sign players, of which you have names like Emmanuel Villa, who's gone, Martin Romagnoli, Ariel Nahuelpan, who was brought in this tournament and is not doing much, Robin Ramirez. I mean, these guys spent a lot of money just out of character for Pumas, really, and they haven't gotten the results that you would have expected. Now, this tournament, I think you could cut a little bit of slack for the manager in particular. They've had a lot of injuries that have really kind of affected them throughout the start of this tournament, but you know, they really have not been able to develop young talent, which has been a staple of Pumas for several years. And the guys that they've brought in to be difference makers have really just been rubbish all around. So, you know, this is actually starting to get troubling for Pumas. They're getting close to getting into the relegation fight. I mean, was this the right move for the short term? Is this going to be able to turn Pumas around, or are we going to see further changes?
I think Pumas have got a problem in that they've got the spine of that team that, you know, won the title in 2009 and 2011 are aging now. You got Dario Verón, you know, still a good defender, but 34 now. You've got the, you know, Picolín brothers, you know what I mean?
Good old Picolín brothers.
Just for comedy value, this just quality. But I just think the team needs a rejuvenation. I'm not sure that some of the youngsters that are coming through have the quality or are ready, you know what I mean? I think, and obviously the buys haven't been good, like you said. I mean, the big spent a lot of money on players that just hasn't worked for them. So, you know, the good thing about Trejo is obviously he was part of the club for the last two titles. So, you know, you think that he will have the confidence, at least of the fans, because I think that's been another big thing at Pumas, is that the fans usually really get behind the team and the club. And I think there's been a lot of friction with some of the recent decisions of the directors, like, you know, Carrillo and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I think just you need to hold. Pumas need like kind of a workover. Like, need to, you know, really rejuvenate themselves and find, like, you know, new identity on the field in terms of newer players and stuff.
Yeah, and also just to add a name that Eric didn't mention, Luis Garcia, the player that came to Puebla and scored a lot of goals and then was sold to Pumas. He hasn't had that much opportunities to play from the start, you know, and this last game against Cholos, I think Johnny was there to see the match. I mean, Luis Garcia came in when Pumas had 10 players on the pitch because Candido Ramirez had a youngster breakdown, and Luis Garcia came in and produced. I don't know why Servín doesn't put him to start, a player that has a repertoire that a lot of players wish they had.
Yeah, I got to see Pumas at the Estadio Caliente this weekend. Man, they were just terrible. The Cholos scored the early goal at the 9th minute, and Pumas kind of went into a meltdown. They started just kicking the Cholos players. And the Tijuana players kind of took advantage and danced around, especially a guy like Fidel Martinez, who doesn't need extra motivation to dance on top of the ball and make you look silly. And, you know, 15 minutes into the game, I told the guy I was sitting next to, this game does not end 11 against 11. And surely enough, it didn't. And as, you know, some of the more veteran players at the end of the game, they were kind of courteous to the reporters and gave interviews. But man, one of the Pericolín brothers, the goalie, he was not in a good mood whatsoever. As he came out of the locker room and into the mix zone interviews zone, you know, reporters were asking him for an interview, and he just shouted out, "Nothing. I'm saying absolutely nothing," and then kept walking. So, you know, really, really bad times at Pumas going on right now.
Look, still better than the time that Miguel Herrera yelled at me. So I wouldn't say, yeah. Yeah, he threw around some big words there. Yeah, that was when I believe Tijuana finished a match with eight players, and they still drew 1-1, something like that.
Yeah.
So Miguel was not pleased about that. Yeah, I mean, do we see Pumas finding a new coach though? If they don't win next weekend, I mean, they didn't fire their manager thus far, but a lot of the fans have been asking for him to leave, and couple of the guys. What was that, Johnny?
Yeah, in my opinion, it all depends on who they hire to replace Aspe. You know,
Romano and Hugo Sanchez are the big candidates there.
Those are the names floating around. Again, I think it's all going to depend on who they hire to replace Alberto García Aspe.
They've already hired him, Mario Trejo.
Yeah, Mario Trejo.
So he's already in.
Yeah, well, the appreciation that I get is that the Pumas fans want Hugo Sanchez back. And I think last time we remember when they brought Mario Carrillo, you know how that turned out. And it looks the same appreciation I'm getting with the name of Rubén Omar Romano. There's a lot of Pumas fans that are a little bit skeptical about hiring Romano.
Former Cruz Azul coach and former America coach.
Imagine that.
In my personal opinion, the perfect guy for this job would be José Guadalupe El Profe Cruz.
It's actually a good name, but not a lot of people are thrown around. Yeah, I think they're going to go with either Romano or David Patiño, former Pumas coach as well. They're probably not going to touch Hugo at this point, especially given the relationship that Mario Trejo has with him, or the non-existing relationship that he has with him. Yeah. But
it's quite funny, actually, the way that, you know, we've got certain coaches that are really kind of under... going into this next week of fixtures, just on the, you know, kind of, like, if you don't get a victory, that's it. So you've got Chivas, Puebla, Pumas, and Atlante. Yeah, pretty much as well, isn't it? It always makes me laugh how there's, like all, in the Mexican League, there's, like, you've always got, like a bench of coaches who are just, like, willing to be wheeled on at the appropriate moment, you know, just early in the season.
Yeah, always the same, like, six or seven guys, right?
But yeah, always Tomás Boy, Romano,
La Volpe. Yeah, I heard La Volpe was in Puebla this weekend. So,
Sergio,
I
mean, Bueno.
Sergio Bueno.
God, I hate Sergio Bueno. I'm sorry. He's just, I mean, I think the only teams that he hasn't coached yet are those four, you know? América, Pumas, Cruz Azul, and Chivas. He's probably coached every other team in the league right now.
Yeah. It'd be interesting if Galindo goes what Chivas do. You know, traditionally, Vergara likes to make a big, like, you know, at times of crisis, he likes to make a big, do something massive. So it would be interesting to see, you know, to see who would coach in that situation. I mean, the big one would be Bielsa.
Oh man, but, you know.
No, we're saving that one for the national team. I don't want him over there at Pumas or anywhere else.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. What else? Jugs test. That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, that we touched on it briefly before. I mean, the two guys that have been widely mentioned as being the ones who failed the drug test after the first week, something that we've been tweeting about avidly, is Cruz Azul goalkeeper and Mexican national team goalkeeper Jose Jesus Corona and Querétaro midfielder Marco Jiménez. Of course, the bigger deal is Jiménez. I'm just kidding. You know, Corona, a guy that is with the national team that has pretty much been integral for Mexico in this past couple of years with Chepo de la Torre at the helm, apparently failed that drug test, but no action was taken. And, you know, now I think the question begs, and this has quieted down in the last couple of days, but still, you know, is there going to be any secondary repercussion from FIFA or from the anti-doping agency, the World Anti-Doping Agency? I mean, I think so, because this has been recurring for Mexico now. This is the second time that this has happened. And last time during the 2011 Gold Cup, all the players involved in those drug tests were sanctioned. They were later exonerated, but they were still sanctioned at the time. And Corona's getting off scot-free. So I wonder what that's all about.
Well, the thing for me is they just swept it all under the carpet without even, you know, they've not actually officially mentioned the players, have they?
No.
If I'm not mistaken.
No.
You know what I mean? It's just the media just know, you know what I mean, through speaking to people there. So, you know, so they've not mentioned the players. They've not, like, you
Doesn't
know.
Doesn't that make
not...
sense, though, that they wouldn't mention the players if one of them were Corona?
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah, definitely. No, that's what I mean. It's just like, and then they provided no evidence. I mean, what they're basically saying is that they've linked it to meat, you know, to meat consumption. So therefore, there's no penalties. But they've not produced any like evidence of this, or you know, and I think you know FIFA should be investigating these type of things. I mean, especially at a time when world sport like it is now, where you know it's just drugs and such a just a massive thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. God knows how much clenbuterol leaves.
I probably got a bit of that in my system after I ate about 7 tacos al pastor last. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, when I play football, Siete doesn't help me. I'm still absolutely knackered after like 5.
Hey, that's enough. Yeah.
Is it time for another The World's Not Fair to Guillermo Ochoa rant from my part?
Oh God!
Yeah, it's been a while.
Go on then.
Those are always fun.
Nah, it's short summary. Like Derek said, Ochoa did have to kind of pay a consequence for eating that tainted meat that the Federation kind of served him up, and you know, Corona's not getting anything, you know, done. Any kind of repercussions for failing this drug test that he did. So, you know, again, the world's not fair. Ochoa should be the starter. End of story.
I think what we have to take a look at is what will happen next. How will the FMX Food handle the situation when more players come out positive with clenbuterol? Will they announce it the same way, the shady way they did this time, or will they actually go out and say the names?
Yeah, they should definitely really come out and say who the players are, just for the interest of transparency, and whether or not they obey their own kind of internal moral code is really their business. I think. I mean, there's going to be criticism no matter what, but you know, I think it's going to turn out worse for Mexico if Corona is indeed one of those two players. FIFA, you know, comes up with the results and they go and say, well, wait a minute. I mean, you guys knew that this guy had failed the drug test and yet you played him in a friendly and probably in a hexagonal game in a World Cup qualifier. You know, that could get really, really uncomfortable for Mexico. And, you know, this is just classic Mexican Football Federation. They do something wrong, they try to cover it up, and it usually blows up in their faces, you know. This happened prior to the 1990 FIFA World Cup, where they were eventually disqualified. And it's something that I think should really be avoided. You know, Mexico has no shortage of goalkeepers, and I know that Corona is a very important player and that he's a locker room presence and all that stuff. But, you know, if not Ochoa, you've got guys like Jonathan Orozco, and you've got guys like, you know, Talavera, which Chepo seems to love, Cirilo Saucedo, Enrique Palos. You know, there's a ton of goalkeepers out there who could do the job for you and do an effective job. Corona is not Chicharito. He's not Giovanni Dos Santos. He's not, you know, a guy that's really going to produce a singular difference for you, especially offensively, where Mexico's been really struggling. So why take the risk, you know?
Yeah. Play Moises Munoz. He'll score up some goals.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, so, I mean, that doesn't really seem to be an issue for me personally. And it's not fair that they would protect him and not protect the other players that have failed these drug tests in the past. You know, that being said, gosh, wouldn't it be funny if Mexico suddenly just resurrected in the hex and they'd be disqualified from the World Cup anyway because of this drug test thing?
I kind of mentioned it on Twitter a few weeks ago. I'm already kind of hoping that Mexico just doesn't qualify to the World Cup. You know, maybe losing millions of dollars, these federation directors will finally learn a lesson. Because, you know, otherwise, when is things going to change? You know, until the day when they lose millions of dollars will be the day they have to change something.
Yeah. I agree. And speaking of Cruz Azul and guys that are pretty important to their teams, I mean, we touched on Chivas, we touched on the Cruz Azul game last weekend, Joao Rojas with a pair of goals. We talked about some of the guys who aren't working out, like Ariel Nahuelpan. What do you guys think? I mean, this is something that I really find interesting. A lot of new players coming into the Liga MX, or a lot of guys that have changed teams over the course of the summer, have been doing pretty well. I mean, who has impressed you the most? I think I'll start this one out and just say that Luis Angel Mendoza and Andres Andrade for America. And, I mean, there is a bit of bias there, but, I mean, I think no one could have expected Mendoza to start for America and do so well.
Yeah, I think Mendoza and Pipe Andrade are two players that bring a new offensive spark to America, especially when last season we were always talking, say, oh, what if Sambuesa gets injured? What happens with Piojo's offense? Well, now Piojo has more variance on that position with Pipe Andrade and now Mendoza, which is a pleasant surprise. In my opinion, I think the player that has surprised me that switched teams is Franco Arizala, who's in León. I think Matosas is finding him a position in which he can explode. He scored a heck of a goal against Pachuca, and he will just keep getting better and better.
Yeah, I'd go for Dolan Pavon in Monterrey. Even Monterrey not even playing well, but he seems the only one to be, you know, trying to produce some spark there. So I think he's done really well. Benedetto up there at Tijuana didn't play the other night, but, you know, I was surprised because, you know, I'd only seen him basically looking at his record, and he didn't look absolutely amazing from Argentina. But, you know, his age and stuff, 23 or something like that, you know, I think he's got a lot to give, and his unbelievable start, hat-trick on his debut. So, you know, definitely, you know, someone who's made an immediate impact.
Yeah, Tom, you took the name right out of my mouth. I was going to go with Benedetto, even though he's only really got to play one game. The second game, he got injured, and He was forced to miss the CONCACAF Champions League game. He was forced to miss the Pumas game, and he's probably going to be forced to miss the weekend's game against Monterrey. And there's no the team has not announced when Benedetto will be fit again or how serious the injury is. For the meantime, they've called back up the club's leading goal scorer, Raúl Enríquez, from their second division affiliate, Dorados de Sinaloa. So Raúl Enríquez is kind of filling in that gap, since both Benedetto and the other signing that Tijuana made, Hercules Gomez, is also out injured.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Before we say goodbye for this week's episode, I'd like to end on a kind of a bittersweet note. It's been we're recording this August 12th, so it's been barely over 1 year.
Wait, do we have the violins?
Yeah, we should.
Got any violins in the background?
maybe a bit of weeping in the background there as well. It's been just over a year since Mexico won their gold medal, their only Olympic gold medal at the 2012 London Olympics. Just a huge moment. I was, of course, with you guys recording that post-game podcast, which was pretty incredible, pretty surreal at the moment. And of course, a lot of things have happened since then, and Mexican soccer has really not had the upswing that we expected after that. But any special memories that you guys hold from that day?
The Peralta goals were I mean, I think the two Peralta goals are the goals that I'm going to keep with me for I think, the rest of my life. It was a Brazil team with the lights of Neymar, Sandro, Oscar, players that made it big in this Confederations Cup, specifically Neymar and Oscar. And to see them fall to a Mexican side that played good football, played the football that we've been asking for the past year or so. I think, the attitude of that team was exemplary. I don't know, because you see the same players go with the national team, but you don't see that character sometimes, that attitude that made this team special, stay afloat. So we'll see. I mean, right now we're looking at this list, this game that's going to occur in New York. Fabian and Giovanni are going to be back together doing their shenanigans. So, I mean, those two did a spectacular Olympic Games in London. So, I mean, those type of things will stay in my mind.
I'd have to say with what has stuck with me, it came months later with that video, that movie, the Oro. That was, really emotional footage, getting to see behind the scenes and seeing how the Mexican national team kind of lived throughout that, the whole Olympic process. That's what I still remember.
Yeah, I think just the team spirit. I think the way they played as a team, but I think that's kind of maybe with a bit of hindsight and looking at the national team that we have now, I think it stood out, more than it should have done. But yeah, I mean, good day. Perhaps Mexico's biggest ever day in terms of soccer, perhaps its greatest day. So
yeah, I remember the moment where I was, I think 99.9% sure that Mexico was going to win the game was a long cross. Just a kind of a desperate non-Brazilian way to play soccer. Long cross trying to find Neymar up front. Corona comes out running like a bull, punches the ball, and just absolutely smashes Neymar onto the ground. All 80 pounds of Neymar just went crashing down into the ground. And, it was just such an exciting moment where even the crowd just started roaring. And That was the exact moment where I thought, well, you know what, we're going to win this no matter what, and no matter how bad things get for Mexico, I think that it's a very, very nice moment to kind of hang your hat on and say, well, we've won a U-17 World Cup, we've won two, reached the podium at the U-20s and won a U-23 World Cup, and if you want to call it that, it's basically what it is. So what's missing from that equation? I think there's one World Cup that's missing from that list, but don't think we're going to get it next year now.
That moment when Brazil scored their goal, though, in the back of every Mexican's mind, it's like, please, not again. Please, not again.
I mean, Oscar had that shot with the header, but it just went off the post. He just didn't hit. He was all alone inside the box. I mean, that could have been the 2-2. It's just a memorabilia.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, again, just a great day, a great game, a great tournament, a great group of players at the right moment. And why can't we get Luis Fernando Tena coaching the national team now? Well, pipe dreams, I guess. But that'll wrap up this week's episode of the Mexican Soccer Show. Remember, you guys can follow us on Twitter. The account for our show is at Mex Soccer Show. You can follow Tom Marshall at Mexico World Cup. Follow Naib Moran at Naib Moran and follow Johnny Rico at Johnny Rico. I am at Goal Eric. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be around tweeting and updating on Facebook. Make sure to stick around and just tell us what you think about the show. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. Come here, people!